Welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. In this episode, I speak to coach and speaker Simon Benn. Simon was adopted at the age of 5 weeks old, and he doesn't remember never knowing that he was adopted. It was at the age of 40 that Simon began to think deeper about adoption and how it may have or may not have affected him. This is a very relaxed chat with Simon, very relaxed, with lots of reflection from both of us. But as ever, it is Simon's story and his reflection on adoption and how it fits into his daily life. If you would like to share your story, whether you're an adult adoptee, adoptive parent, foster care, then contact us on any of our socials by direct message or email andfpodcast@gmail.com. That's andfpodcast@gmail.com. So I'm joined by Simon today. Hi, Simon.
Hello. Good morning to you.
Good. I know it is morning as well. I never do these in the morning. It's normally in the afternoon or the evening, you know, with a glass of wine. But today it's coffee and it's quite early. So, so first of all, introduce yourself. Tell us why you're here.
Sure. So I'm Simon Benn. I'm an adoptee. I was adopted at 5 weeks old, and I find it fascinating. A fascinating area. It's determined a lot of my life later in life and what I do now. And I came across you guys and your podcast, and I love the energy of what you did and the humor that you bring to what is, you know, can be a tricky subject. And I just thought I want to be involved, and then I came on your conference last Friday, listened to that all day, and just thought it's brilliant. And then got in touch and said, look, you know, look, if you're looking for guests, I'd love to be on. So
yeah, good. Well, like I said earlier, I'm pleased that you listened all day and that you had the kind of staying power to be able to do that. So let's start at the beginning then. So you were adopted quite young.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I was adopted at 5 weeks old, I think it was. So this was back in 1967. Yeah, I was adopted at 5 weeks old. And I was told very young that I was adopted. I was told so young that I don't actually remember being told. But I do know that I was told, and I'm 99% sure that I was told with the help of a book, and a book that explained, you know, a couple adopting a child. So, I was told very early, and then a couple of years later, my sister was adopted as well. So she was adopted from a different family. I was born in Wrexham, which I only actually found out when I was 11 or 12. Right. So until then I'd always been, my mum and dad collected me from an adoption agency in Liverpool. So they thought I'd been born in Liverpool, or that's right, what they told me or whatever. But when I got to 12, I think I was going on I needed a passport for the first time, my own passport for the first time. And so I had to get a look at my birth certificate or something. I can't remember. Anyway, then found out that I was born in Wrexham. So yeah, I had a mainly happy childhood. I had some struggles like yourself. We talked about that just before we came on. Some bullying and my sister used to say things every now and again, you know, do you want to find your birth mother? But she didn't use the word birth mother, but whatever. I can't remember what she said. I said, no, I'm fine. So that was kind of, that was my childhood was fine. Loving parents. My mum and dad couldn't have kids for medical some medical reasons. They did a lot of fostering before they. Before they were kind of like became adoptive parents, and everything went kind of bumping along nicely. I went into the family business, and I had a lot of challenges with that with the business. And then around the time I was really struggling, I found out that my teddy bear, the teddy bear that I'd had from forever, was actually given to me by my birth mother. And at one point I thought, or when I found that out, I thought, so this was when I was 40. My mum and dad were clearing some stuff that I'd never cleared out of home.
Yeah.
When I'd left home at 21 or 22 or whatever it was. I thought, when I found that out, I thought, oh, that's kind of strange, curious. But I wasn't particularly, struck by it or. But then I was telling that story to, a trainer. I went on a communication skills training course, which actually sounds pretty boring, doesn't it? It was horse whisperer. I had a business coach, and this business coach bought me this horse whispering course. It wasn't kind of like horse whispering, learning communication skills with horses. Sounds a bit bizarre, doesn't it? But it's great fun. Mm-hmm. But at some stage during that day, not when we're working with humans, a guy that worked with me, rather than when working in the horse, I had a complete strop. I had a big anger attack. And this lady said, the trainer, lady called Sarah, brilliant, highly conscious, gifted lady, said, I think there's something going on there, Simon. And if you want to talk about it, then, I'd be happy to listen, So I went to see her and, I told the story of the teddy bear, and suddenly I was like, I was totally overtaken with a big kind of like an eruption. It's like a volcano of anger coming out of me. With a lot of swearing. And it was essentially, my mother, my birth mother, didn't love me enough. And lots of profanity. I don't know. about, she didn't love me enough to keep me. And so this kind of came, this came out, and the Sarah, the lady I was chatting to, said, "Well, I'm a mum myself, Simon, as you know, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't kind of like that." So the eruption kind of settled down at that point, but it was still played on my mind.
Yeah.
And I can look back on it now and say that I was pinning the tail on the wrong donkey. Do you know what I mean? I got it into my head somehow, into my heart with this. That I wasn't good enough, and I was unloved, and I've never felt that way before, and I pinned it on the adoption rather than actually what it was I was struggling with the business stuff.
Oh, really? Okay.
I was struggling with the business stuff was the bigger thing. And I was thinking I wasn't good enough because I kind of got into the family business. Right. So, and my dad had been, my mum and dad worked together, and it was the family business. And they sold one bit of it. And the other bit was trickier on its own. So actually, what was... Am I making any sense? I thought it was about the adoption, but really it was about not being good enough and a low mood.
Yeah.
And kind of letting my...
So did it kind of, that experience in your life of being responsible for something that was, I might be using the wrong word, gifted to you, shall we say. So, you took on that, and that kind of got you to a place where actually, perhaps, I'm not putting words in your mouth here, but perhaps the kind of the other things that you'd never really had to contemplate or figure out, and, you know, scared of letting them down. And
yeah.
What, do you think that's kind of...
I've done a lot of work around a lot. So this was in, I'm 53 now.
Mm.
I started getting into personal development in, probably 5-6 months after I found out about the teddy bear, after I had this eruption thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. The logic of the why doesn't seem to me to be a particularly fruitful area to look into. I can see some truth in what you... I can see some truth in what you said. I think it's simpler than that. And I think it's about not feeling good enough.
Yeah.
Not feeling good enough. And not feeling good enough, I'm thinking that that's to do with adoption.
Mm.
So I've got a very good reason, a very compelling reason to think I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can give you two reasons for that. Either the business or the adoption, but none of those reasons aren't really the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really the truth, because underneath it all, I think that all of us, whether we are adopted or not adopted, we all feel that we're not good enough. It's part of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not actually part of the adoptive condition.
Yeah. So thinking about that then, I mean, obviously, what strikes me right now, especially, I mean, you know, on social media, there's I follow a lot of adopted people who are adults, and some have, you know, get to a certain age, where they start to kind of realize or think about kind of what could have been, what should have been, you know, reunions and all that sort of stuff. Do you think that it's almost like an expectation that you'll do that? And in actual fact, some people, you know, as an example, when I looked at some of the stuff that you do on your website, you mentioned you're adopted, but it's in very small letters at the bottom of one page. It's not anywhere else, you know. So do you think there's maybe an expectation that, you know, if you're adopted, then you should be expected to feel this way and that way and the next way, or not?
Yes, I think there's quite a lot there in what you just said there, Scott. So let me try and give you... I answer them as succinctly as I can and what I can remember what you said.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm big. I'm really big on clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really big on clarity. I try to be as clear as I possibly can. And other people's lack of clarity and not answering questions, especially politicians, drive me absolutely nuts.
I don't think you're alone there.
So... Yeah, first off, great. Sorry, you just reminded me something. Yeah, we're getting quite heavy here. We can be going quite heavy here. So, okay. Thank you for bringing it to life, to bring some humor back into it. because I can go pretty deep, and maybe sometimes that's a little bit too deep for people, you know, who are tuned. So the first thing is there an expectation for people that they will go for amongst adopted people that they will go looking? Yes and no. I don't really know. I'm more interested in the specific than the general. Second question was, it's quite small on my website. Yes, that's it. Yes. Is that intentional? No, I hadn't realized that the font was any smaller. I've added it to the website recently, right, because I've realized that I want to do more in this, mm-hmm, in this area, because when I started working with the kids stuff, I wanted to change the world, and I didn't want to just change adoptees' world or adoptive parents' world. I wanted to change the world. So I figured that if I just put my adoption stuff on that, then would people say, oh yeah, well, he's the guy that helps adopted parents, or he's the guy that, and that would narrow my audience. So I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So does that answer that? That's why it is what it is. But I've added it to the website. I hadn't realized it was actually, in smaller font. It's just a bit that I added to the website last week. The third bit was about, do we expect adopted people to feel a certain way and think certain things? And the short answer is a completely resounding yes.
Right. Okay.
The other, just going back to my story. So I got into personal development. I learned some really important things, not intellectually, but in my bones. I saw some stuff about how we all think, you know, and how we all feel, such as this feeling of not being good enough, which is part of the human condition. We all feel that way. We just hang that feeling on a different, pin that tail on a different donkey. And it's not the truth of who we are. So I learned some stuff. I got out of my business and I went out to help other people. I had a moment talking to my coach one day and I just said, I want your job, Liz. I want to help. I want to help other people. I want to be a coach. Yeah. So my first venture into this area was helping other small business owners, because I thought that I saw a lot of small business owners, especially men, struggling and being unable to talk about their struggling, mm-hmm, because boys don't cry, because small business owners are self-sufficient, because, you know, we don't do this stuff. That didn't work out. But that, I got a huge lesson from that, which was that failure. I thought that failure, actually, you know, in my churned up mind, I thought failure was a really bad thing. I pulled the plug on that business. I didn't owe anybody any money, but I put a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of effort and a lot of heart and soul into that. And it didn't work out. So then I thought, well, how can I change the world? I want to change the world. I want to help other people. How can I do that? So I used to sell to big corporations. So I thought, well, if I can get, I know I can sell to, I know I can get meetings with these chief execs and HR directors of these big blue chip companies, you know, Shell and BT and people like that. So what if I do that? What if I do, like, let's call it corporate consciousness or corporate happiness training, sort of thing. So I tried that, and I got loads of meetings, but I hadn't got a track record. So I pulled the plug on that as well, and I was like, "What am I going to do next?" And then I came up with the kids stuff. But in and I've been working on my kids project since 2013. So it's about confidence, resilience, bully-proofing kids, inspiring kids to make their dreams come true. It's fun. It's about confident coconuts and positive pomegranates. It's fun. You know, I say it's fun. It's not a therapy. It's the kids absolutely love it. And I get such a buzz from doing it. And now I'm working with parents, kind of showing them my process. But in the meantime, halfway through that, I was struggling a little bit. And, well, no, I wasn't struggling. Somebody told me I had a problem. And it was related to my adoption. So I kind of like, all right, okay, I've got another problem here. I need to address this. And then somebody recommended Nancy Verrier's book. And I thought, at first I thought, this explains everything. And then I realized about 6 months, a year later, I was painting myself into the corner.
Right.
People expect adopted people to be primarily wounded. That's the title of the book. Mm-hmm. And I bought into that. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Okay.
And I'm sure she didn't mean to set out that way. But the expectation is, society's expectation is flavored, well, more than flavored. It is driven by stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting perspective, actually, on it.
And it's not true. It is not. It is not true. It is not true. I'm joined a few adoptee groups, and I see the range. Mm-hmm. Different groups have different vibes. I was actually blocked from commenting on one for talking about this stuff from my own perspective.
Right.
So by challenging the perceived wisdom that adoptees are broken, mm-hmm. only from my perspective.
Yeah.
I was blocked from the group for commenting. Mm-hmm. If we go up against this challenging this status quo that adopted people are broken or wounded or knackered, mm-hmm. it becomes you know, I'm the canary in the coal mine in everybody's in that group, you know, I was a canary in the coal mine, and the other miners wanted to kill the canary, mm-hmm. well, not the other miners, the supervisor, the admin on the Facebook group wanted to silence the canary who is alerting the rest of the miners to the danger that this becomes a really dangerous self-fulfilling prophecy, And I know because I've experienced that. That's what I did. That's what I did. I fell for it.
And of course, part of that could be, so I'm just thinking of some examples I can relate to in that, and I know that I'm not here to talk about myself, but you know, you read things and you can sometimes be influenced by those things. So in terms of, you know, 15 years since I became an adoptive parent, and through that time I've learned a lot in terms of what I like to call reflective parenting. Now, that seems quite obvious when you think about reflecting on how you've done something and then changing it and making it better for, you know, your children and for your family. But there are, you know, there are occasions where you can read something and go, oh, I wonder. And then you start to kind of, it's almost like the snowball effect, doesn't it? You know, it gets bigger and bigger and you become this person, your thoughts go to places maybe that, you know, that's kind of what was the purpose of it in the first place, was to take you to that place rather than you believe in yourself. It comes back to that thing when you say you're not good enough. You can be influenced by others if you're the kind of person that doesn't feel good enough about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about the bullying stuff.
Mm.
Okay. So that's where I got, me being bullied was a far, if I look back on it now, right?
Yeah.
That was a far bigger influence on my self-esteem, my self-worth, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bigger influence on my than being adopted as a kid. So,
yeah.
Bullies make it about us. So we were both. We talked before we came on about being bullied for having buck teeth. Eh? So I got bullied for having buck teeth. I got name calling and stuff like that, and it wasn't great, but it paled into insignificance compared to this some bullying that I had on the scout camp. And as I'm talking then on this, as I'm talking to this Scott, I'm just thinking, how many gay guys and women get bullied for being homosexual? I'm tearing up here.
Don't.
So make it about us.
Yeah.
Bullies make it about us.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got buck teeth, or we're gay, or in my case, it was really stupidly bizarre. This was on scout camp, right? So, I went to a private school, and there's another story there. Which we'll explore if we, I don't know. I went to a private school because I wanted to be with my best mate from primary school.
Mm.
Then I went into the local scout. I went to within the local clubs, and that was great. But then I went to local scouts, and all the other kids were at the local comprehensive school, and I wasn't there. So I got bullied because I was posh, because I went to the private school, because I didn't drink tea. I got bullied because I didn't drink tea. I got bullied because I was not a very practical. I'm not a very practical guy. So I got bullied because I was the youngest kid in the tent, and that's bullies get. Big guys pick on little guys. The youngest always gets. Smallest always often gets picked up. The new kid at school gets bullied because they're new. And I got bullied because what he used to make me do, this patrol leader guy, this 14-year-old lad. He made me, whenever I messed up, he made me kneel on the ground and say, I'm a stupid worthless piece of effing S.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he did that all week. And
it's awful.
And that, you know, that not good enough is, you know, when you're a kid, you take it in. You're a sensitive kid.
Mm-hmm. And it sticks with you as well, doesn't it?
It sticks with you. But I've had a few breakthrough moments on this, but one of those is realizing that what he was doing was, he was treating me like his dad treated him, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And I was chatting to a kind of friend of a friend, guy I've known a long time about this, and he knows that I do the work with kids. And he said, he was talking about, he said, well, what was this course, this bullying stuff? And I mentioned the guy's name. And he said, oh, I know him. I worked with him in a pub. And he mentioned the name of the pub and the village the pub's in. I worked with him in the pub like 30 years ago. You know, he said, oh yeah, nobody wanted to go near him. He was a real nasty piece of work.
Mm.
So it was nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
It was nothing to do with me. It was nothing to do with him. You know, it was down to the habits that he'd picked up and the anger that he picked up. He'd obviously grown up in a very angry household with an angry dad who took it out on him. So that not good enough stays with us. So I've given you three different examples here why I'm not good enough. So I'm not good enough, one, because I'm adopted, two, because this guy told me that I was, and three, because I didn't make a success of business as much as my dad. But we did some fantastic things in that business. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We did some really superb stuff. And we helped, you know, it was an education publishing business. And we were getting like 1 million downloads a month off our website for this, you know, for helping kids with business studies. And we did water safety and electricity safety and all sorts of really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't as financially lucrative as you know, investment banking and stuff like that. And I was never bothered. I was never bothered about the money anyway. You know.
Yeah.
I was never bothered about the money, but you know, I used the money thing as a. I thought that you know, business success would make me happy and hitting a profit target would make me happy, and it didn't. And I'm so glad that I found that out, because that set me on the path to doing what I'm doing now. And the stuff with the kids and with the parents is just amazing, you know. So the first bit of feedback that I ever had that really set me a light, really, with delight, was a young girl telling me, well, this is another thing. This is the thing about bullying. You know, I never told my mum and dad that I was bullied on scout camp. I just didn't go back to that scout trip.
Yeah.
This was about 7 years ago. It was my fourth, by this time of year, actually, just come up December. It was the fourth session I'd done with kids in schools, and I wanted the kids to remember what they'd learned. So I said to the kids, "Okay, so finish this sentence for me." And basically, it was about, you know, what they could do that they couldn't do before. And I went around the classroom to make sure that I wasn't kind of patronizing the kids or I was expecting them to do something that they couldn't do. And this girl kind of ushered me across, you know, beckoned me across with her hand, and she said, "I don't want to tell the rest of the class this, Mr. Ben. And I thought, that sounds really, it makes me sound like I'm really old. Mr. Ben. She won't remember the Mr. Ben.
No. But instinctively, I did.
I said, oh, call me Simon. And she said, well, Mr. Ben. Okay, well, then I just go live here. She said, now I can go back to dance class. And I'm like, what? And she said, so the session, right, had been about helping you make your dreams come true, ignoring people that say you can't make your dreams come true, like what Harry Potter would call the Dementors, yeah? What J.K. Rowling calls them, and ignoring bullies. And the ignoring bullies bit had been about 5 minutes, and I'd told them a little bit about the story that I shared you, obviously without any of the swearing, because they're 10-year-old kids. She said, I can go back to dance class. And I'm like, you know, silently I'm going, I need to know, what is it? What is it? You know, the hairs on my arms are, they went up. Like, I'm onto something here. Something, this is big. She's going to tell me something big. And I'm feeling it right now as I'm telling you the story. She told me the story about how she'd got bullied at dance class for being too good at dancing. Which is very ironic for me, because I've been bullied at scout camp for being not a good scout. So, you know. And she hadn't told anybody, but it got so bad. They hadn't done it while the dance teacher could see them, obviously. They were jealous of her. These other kids were jealous. These 10-year-old kids, 9-year-old, 11-year-old kids were jealous of her. And she stopped going. And something that she'd heard in that fun session about positive pomegranates and smiley strawberries and putting your lid on the juicer had led her to that insight. That insight. And that insight had meant she could make her dream come true, because her dream was to be on Strictly. She couldn't do that. If she stopped learning to dance at 10, she ain't gonna ever gonna be on Strictly, is she? Unless she becomes a celebrity and it comes on it. But you know, she wanted to be the professional dancer. So I kept on doing this stuff, and about a third of the kids told me that they told me. I asked them to write it down for them, and then I asked them if they want to share it with the kids.
Yeah.
And as the rest of the class, because it's obviously private. But I'm writing it down so that it kind of reinforces it. The act of writing stuff down kind of reinforces stuff in our heads. That's why we do journaling and diaries and stuff like that. And about, a third of the kids. But there wasn't just that. So we've gone away from the adoption stuff, but you know, that's the adoption stuff drove that, because it was it was about happiness and about, you know, the essence of who we are. So I get a bit carried away talking about the kids.
No, you're fine. Don't worry. And this is the whole point of having these kinds of conversations, because, like I say, it's definitely a different perspective to the ones that we're used to hearing. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not all doom and gloom, but you know, sometimes it is. We need to hear kind of the other side of this, because we do, you know, especially as adoption stands now. I mean, it was slightly different in terms of the reasons for adoption in 1967, but you know, the kind of the number of people that we hear who do have reflections on it, and you know, who were adopted and who you know, going to reunion and all that sort of stuff, it just proves that not everybody follows the same path, and that should be true for parents who are, you know, parenting and caring for children who have been adopted.
Totally. And as I reflect, I've been through the doom. But my doom has been a walk in the park compared to most people, compared to a lot of people. And I hesitate, you know, I'm sure some people might think that I've been a kind of deluded, is it Pollyanna-ish? I don't know what the word is.
Oh yeah. I can't remember what that is, but yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Deluded. But I don't think this isn't stuff that I think. This is stuff that I really believe. You know, I believe that we are all we're all perfect. We're all that love thing, you know. We're all love. We lose sight of that. We're all perfection, and we are, you know, the human spirit. The human spirit. I don't think it is broken unless we think it is. But I do think it's actually unbreakable. You know what? What adoptive parents bring is love and hope in sometimes tricky situations. Mm-hmm. And that's what my parents did for me. And I'm sure that's what you do for your kids.
Almost definitely. And I think that we, you know, anybody who's related to adoption gets kind of told off for saying love is all you need, because it is. You do need more than love, but it's a massive part of it, and it's probably one of the most integral parts of adoption. You know, and sometimes we get criticized on the podcast for forgetting to mention that we do love our children every time we talk about them or every time we talk about a situation. But it goes without saying that that's there, but maybe sometimes we just don't say it enough.
Well, for me, I'm loving this conversation, Scott. I think that love's the backstop. You know, love is where you're coming from. And yes, we've all been told, I love you at different level with different levels of profundity. So it ain't about it isn't about the saying, it's where you're coming from. So for me, it's the backstop. It's where you're coming from. You're coming from love. And love is the backstop. It's the safety net. It's what, you know, it's what we are, not what we. So I'm slightly concerned I'm getting a bit esoteric here. it's what we are. It's where we're coming from. We're coming from love. So I come from love. I try to come from love in everywhere. But I still get cheesed off about tractors driving slowly and keeping me away from the swimming pool. The swimming pool is opening again next week. Hallelujah. I put on a bit of, sorry, I'm not a religious guy. I don't know why I said hallelujah. So you could say, right, if you were a therapist, right, you could say, so Simon is saying hallelujah. And therefore, he is a religious person. And then, as soon as he said that, that means he's ashamed of his that he may be seen as a, and this is to do with adoption. Well, no, do you know what I mean? So I get frustrated with tractors driving slowly and get impatient. I get impatient in the swimming pool. I don't come from love all the time, but I want to come from love more of the time. And I'm coming from love as much as I can, as much as my level of consciousness allows me to do in any given moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have my moments. I have my moods, but our mood creates our day. Our day doesn't create our mood. You know, it's an inside out job that we, it's an inside out life that we live, you know. One moment, the adoption, the teddy bear thing didn't mean a lot to me. And then one moment, a couple of weeks later, it did. What changed was my thought about that and the meaning that I attached to the fact that of the teddy bear and saw it as some consolation prize. I did some therapy about 5 years ago on this, and I got really scared about being rejected by my birth mother again.
Right.
In my head, obviously, you know. And so I went looking. Unfortunately, she died. So.
All right.
But I got my adoption file. I found out, you know, my name and I've had two names, and you know, I was David Anthony Flower, and yeah. Now I'm Simon Jonathan Bent. But something in the adoption file, there was a really powerful note. If I can find it, would you mind if I read it to you?
Yeah.
Because this is what really. There's a reason I'm reading it to you. So it's got a date stamp of the 9th of February, 1967. So this is why I know the 5 week thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
4th of January. And it says, "Dear Mrs. Bell," I think it says. So this is a letter from my birth mother to the adoption agency lady, Mrs. Bell.
Right.
Thank you for everything concerning last Friday. So last Friday is the day that, you know, she handed
right.
me. She picked me up from the foster home, and so I've threaded picked me up from the lady that was fostering me and took me to the adoption agency. I was going to buy a teddy bear for David in Liverpool on Friday, but because we met a lot of traffic, I didn't have time. I thought the parents wouldn't mind if he had a little something from me and was upset when I couldn't get one. Get him one. Please, do you think it would be possible to buy him a little one for you to send on to the birth parents? And she was coming from love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was coming from love. Mm-hmm. Do you watch Long Lost Families? Do you ever watch that?
I have done. Yeah.
it doesn't always work out.
No. Yeah.
But the birth mothers are always coming from love. It wasn't just my birth mother that was coming from love. Every birth mother is coming from love. Mm. That's where they're coming from. I'm holding it together now, but at the time, I was in floods of tears reading that and reading. You know,
yeah.
To, that story. You know, we're not.
I mean, it's like I said, a completely different perspective to how, you know, the conversations that I'm used to having on adoption. And I think that it's kind of, it's definitely a perspective that perhaps we need to hear more of to kind of balance out, you know, and, you know, I used that word love quite simply earlier on, because I just don't think we use it enough. And it's quite clear that, you know, sometimes it's one of the things that's kind of within adoption that we don't really, that we take for granted in a lot of ways, but actually there's love coming from two different kind of perspectives, isn't there? There's the love that develops over time when you adopt a child, because let's face it, it's not always instant from both sides. You know, the love from a child to their parent is kind of expected, but you know, it's kind of, is it ever there? We don't, you know, I'm not talking about talking on behalf of anybody, but you know, how do we know we love our parents?
How do we know? Well, there's two things here, right? I'm hesitating slightly to, because I really don't want to come across as a patronizing git.
We'll leave that to Al.
I was thinking there's a couple of different ways I could go with it, and so let me start with a more straightforward way, because I think that more people will get that. So I've been with my now wife since 1993, and I remember driving somewhere. I remember the road actually. I was driving on my own around Christmas time, probably about a year after we got together, and I asked myself the question, why do I love my wife, right? We're looking for reasons, and the reason is a bit of a silly one, really. Or a big one, you know. But the best I could come up with was because she does what she says she's going to do. You know, we need to trust people. And as soon as I say that, I think, well, some shrink would say, well, yes, adoption, trust is a very big issue for adopted kids. Well, trust is a big issue for everybody. Mm-hmm. It is not unique. It is not unique to adopted kids. It's got nothing to do with that. But it's very easy to see or to put the tail on the wrong donkey. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I know I love my kids or something like that? So love is in the heart. And how and why is in the head. They are two related areas of us, but they are different. Why is looking for a rationale, a reason, and love is non-reasonable, isn't it? It's got there isn't any reason for it. Not that I figured anyway, because it ain't about analysis, is it?
No.
You know, it's not like buying a car magazine to decide whether you want a Ford or a BMW, and you look at the fuel economy, and you look at the carbon emissions, and you look at the horsepower, and you look at the price, and you look at the trim. That's not how love works.
Mm. Interesting. Very interesting. I think we're going to...
Yeah.
We're going to leave it there.
Look at the time.
Anybody who's listening is going to be thinking deep now. Not what I expected to get out of this today, certainly. But listen, Simon, thank you so much for talking to me. And just to go back to that book, in case, because obviously people will wonder, maybe if they're listening for the first time, what the book is, and it's The Primal Wound, isn't it, that you were referring to earlier on?
It's The Primal Wound, yeah.
Yeah, so and I do hear a lot. I've never read it myself, and I have no intentions of reading it, to be honest with you. I think I've got enough stuff going on in my head, so I'm not dismissing the book. I'm just saying that, you know, it's one of those books that, you know, probably might tip me over the edge, and, you know, that's kind of being honest about that. So but some people might, and that's their prerogative, I guess. But thank you for talking to me. Go on,
yeah, sorry. It tipped me over the edge.
Mm. Yeah.
And got me believing some stuff that I'd now see as untrue, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Unlike some of the maybe Facebook groups, if we've got an opinion, why can we not be allowed to share without fear of being blocked or dismissed for it, or, you know, whatever the case may be? At the end of the day, we're all human, and, you know, we're entitled to have these kind of things.